Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Men to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I'm your host, Gabe Kuhn, on @Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show, off a weekend celebrating his birthday. He may be, you know, maybe still moving a little bit slow today. Not totally sure, but it's Connor Dunning on @C Dunning929. Connor, how was your birthday weekend?
It was great. It was a great birthday weekend. I am definitely still moving a little slow right now.
Is that a little bit of a hiccup still? Damn! On a Monday!
Man, it's been...
You celebrated on Saturday and we're hiccuping on a Monday.
That's
called being in your 30s, yeah, 31.
31.
Yeah.
Let's just say I am very happy that I tied one on Saturday because I didn't have to...
I got to momentarily forget
what happened in Memphis sports.
Yeah, it was an awful weekend. Awful weekend.
Truly one of the worst I think we've ever had.
I think since I moved to Memphis... In the summer of 2013, this is the worst weekend of Memphis sports I've ever been a part of.
We had 6 minutes of joy. 6 minutes.
I'm not mad that the Grizzlies lost to the Cavs. I expected that. But Ja Morant started the game well, out in 6 minutes because of a calf injury. We got an update on that today, 2 weeks. We'll discuss that throughout the show. So they lost that game. Then you get to Saturday, and Tigers lose to ECU, even though the door was cracked a little bit, right? USF was the leader in the clubhouse to make the CFP and get into the American Conference Championship. They lose to Navy. So the door was cracked a little bit. You still needed more help, but if you beat ECU, you keep yourself in the fight. More of a fight than you thought it would be going into the weekend. And then you cap it all off with a Sunday game at FedEx Forum against a 1-2 UNLV team who had lost to 2 mid-majors heading into of FedEx Forum. Josh Pastner's return, 92-78. Awful performance from start to finish from the Tigers. It was pitiful. It was awful. And I don't say that lightly. Not fun. I did have a couple of serotonin hits, though, over the weekend that made me smile at least momentarily. It was like a 2 or 3 minute spurt for each. One was, did you see the Unk halftime show for the Pistons and 76ers?
I did see that.
Was that Friday or Saturday?
I don't remember.
That made me crack a smile. You had four guys in hats and sort of button-down bowling shirts dancing at halftime to James Brown and Rick James. That was pretty phenomenal. I need to see that in Memphis. Need to replicate that. Also, I think it's impossible to be sad, and I'm not sure if my listeners are familiar with this wonderful lady. But Olivia Dean was the musical act on Saturday Night Live this weekend. She has a song called Man I Need. It's impossible.
She's wonderful.
It's impossible to be mad when you hear that song. So that was a nice little serotonin blast for me amid my just anger with how the Tigers ECU game sort of figured itself out. But you had a birthday, so you had a nice little serotonin blast the entire day Saturday.
I certainly did. It was awesome. We went to the arcade place in Carville called Nerd Alert and just tied one on for a little bit. They allowed us to have some refreshments.
Yes.
Some Tiny Bomb. Little old Dominic may have made an appearance, and then we made our way down to a good old Rockies for some darts and pool and many green tea shots.
I think the neighborhood watering hole, you know, it's starting to like slowly phase out of society, but Rockies is always there for a reprieve. One of the greatest neighborhood watering holes I've ever been able to show up to on a consistent basis.
They were Wolf of Wall Streeting me with the green tea shots. Every 5 minutes, there was a new one in front of me.
Okay. That explains the hiccup on a Monday.
I didn't hiccup.
That was a hiccup.
I did not hiccup.
Okay. All right.
We can play the tape back. There was no hiccup.
I don't know. I think we need more. That's more of like a camera. We need a camera on you, but we don't have that set up right at the current moment. Although we're working on it.
We are working
over
on
here
it.
At 92.9 FM.
Stay tuned. ESPN.
We do have 3 hours to talk. We'll get to Tiger football, how I felt this weekend and watching that game and where my feelings are at around that program and around Ryan Silverfield. I think there's a lot of polarized discussion on each side. With polarized discussion, usually you can find the real answer somewhere in the middle. I'll try to bring you through my thought process and watching that game and seeing where the Tigers are sitting right now. 4-3 in conference, yuck, and 8-3 overall. And no chance at an American Conference title game or appearance. No chance at a college football playoff. Lost to ECU on the road. It was heartbreaking, but I'll take you through that. Also get to college football week 12. What stood out to me? There was a lot of things that stood out to me. Watching that day from start to finish. And then we sort of capped it all off. Ole Miss gets the nice win over Florida. Lane Kiffin had yet to beat Florida, so there is that. I mean, that was a good win. Good environment there at Vaught-Hemingway. Shout out to all the Ole Miss fans who showed up and showed out for that game. But some drama around Lane Kiffin. There's flight logs being tracked. There's flights being tracked in general. There's an Ole Miss athletic department that's frustrated with the way that Lane Kiffin is handling the whole job coaching carousel thing. So need to discuss that, give you my unfiltered thoughts on how Lane Kiffin is handling this situation with Ole Miss. As far as guests are concerned, David Cobb at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, Harold Grader, trip around the NFL, 5:30, and Blitz, of course, at 6:30. That is the show for you. All right, Tigers lose 31-27 on Saturday night against East Carolina. What's frustrating most is looking at how the door had cracked open for you. You had Navy beat USF, who was the leader in the clubhouse for everything that mattered in the American Conference and in the G5. They lose a ball game. They drop a game. You had the chance down the stretch of the season with a Navy loss or a North Texas loss to, if you beat that ECU team, to put yourself back into the American Conference title conversation. And they have a 17-10 lead at halftime. They get the ball coming out of half, do nothing with it, sort of just go back and forth the entire second half. And then at the end of the game, tie ball game, and your defense gift wraps you a win. They get a turnover on that ECU offense. You take over on their end of the field, going in on the outside barely of the red zone. And it felt as if the coaching staff decided, hey, we're going to win this ball game with a field goal and try to get our defense to stop ECU. Now, we know Memphis football's defenses over the years, especially in crunch time. Have they ever really come up big in those moments? Yeah, they came up big in the Arkansas game, but that, I hate to say it, looking back at it in this way, a bit fluky. You have a running back trucking a linebacker. He's still in the air, barely. The knee doesn't touch the ground. And your safety, thank God for Chris Bracey, comes in and punches the ball out. But that two-minute drill by Arkansas, they went right down the field and were going to score and were going to win the game. All they needed was a field goal. So you got lucky in that situation. You tried to play this game very similarly. And what did ECU do in the matter of 40 seconds? Threw a deep bomb over the middle of the field, 40-plus yards for a touchdown in traffic. You can't win a one-on-one, and you're down by four at that point. You have to go play for a touchdown. And then I thought on the ensuing possession going down, I don't know what the plan was, but they ripped a couple of out routes with 11 seconds to go, like they were trying to set themselves up for a field goal when they're down by four. Now, obviously, I think they're trying to set themselves up for a shorter throw on the Hail Mary, but obviously you got pressure in a three-man rush, and Brandon Lewis isn't even able to get it within 10 yards of the end zone. You lose the ball game 31-27. Now, where do I come down on this? They're 8-3. They've lost two straight games in frustrating fashion when you had every opportunity to go win them. But when you look at Ryan Silverfield's overall record, overall accomplishments at the University of Memphis, they're good, okay? 50-23. He's gone 24-6 in his last 30. They've had three top 25 rankings since he has been the coach at the University of Memphis, including a top 25 finish last year after beating a West Virginia team, Power 4 team, in the Frisco Bowl. So, like, when you look at his accomplishments and you look at how this program is run and you look at the recruiting that they're doing, the ability they have to turn over the roster, it's good. But you have to come to terms with the fact, in this day and age, in the current situation, good is not good enough. It's not. A six-year conference title drought, when you're trying to get into the Big 12, when you're trying to show your value around the country, it ain't good enough. When you have seven or eight teams that will likely be in the American Conference title game before you have in that period, that ain't good enough. I'm just telling the truth. You can look back at the Larry Porter era all you want. That's fine. Look at how bad it used to be. Well, it ain't that bad anymore, and we should ask for more as we continue to move down this path. When you get more resources, when you show that you can have sustained success under three head coaches, you should be asking for conference title games. You should be asking, quite frankly, every other year, every couple of years, to be the CFP representative for the Group of Five. I don't think that's too much to ask. But to lose games like you lost at home against Tulane, where you give up 35 in the first half, then finally make it adjustments, but it's too late. To lose a game on the road against ECU where you get a fumble within the last 3 minutes of the game on their end of the field and settle for a field goal and then lose because they throw a bomb down the field your defense can't hold up, that's frustrating. That's not good enough. I don't think anything about this program under Ryan is bad. It's not bad. I don't think you should be fired. But we are trickling toward a place of stagnation that is going to be hard to sell to fans year after year after year. Good is not good enough. You have to be great. You have USF trickling up behind you with a new stadium. They're trying to press into a new conference. You have Tulane, who is a consistent player in the American Conference title game, has won a couple of them. Beat USC in a New Year's Six bowl game a few years back. They're making the move behind you to try to push for a bigger conference. Boise State's always apparent, always been there. They've had longer sustained success than you on the football side of things. So in this moment, Ryan may have good numbers. It may look good on paper. But if you use your eyeballs and you follow this team and you follow these seasons and how they inevitably play out, good ain't good enough. It's as simple as I'll put it.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Good isn't good enough anymore. Memphis has surpassed where good is the bar for a successful football season. It doesn't matter what happens the rest of this year. In my opinion, this season's been a failure. It has been a failure. You cannot have three losses and the losses that you have. One of those losses is fine. One of them was kind of expected. You thought you were going to lose to that team, or you thought there was a possibility you're going to lose to that team. The other two, unacceptable. Just simply unacceptable to lose at UAB when they have an interim coach. Unacceptable to lose to a team like East Carolina. You have more resources. You have more talent. If you want to reach the goals that Memphis wants to get to, you have to beat teams like this. We can't be questioning whether or not this Tigers football team is prepared for teams who are below them. We know they're ready for teams above them. They usually win those games and compete in those football games. Teams that are at their level or below, though, you have no idea. It's a crapshoot every single week. That's unacceptable. The fan base deserves more. They deserve more. And if you want more as a program, you have to beat these teams. The fact that you haven't made it to a conference championship game and are going to miss it again is unacceptable. The door was open for you again, and you slammed it shut immediately.
You were the leader in the clubhouse after beating South Florida, who is the only team in the Group of Five, per my knowledge, per all the reports I've read, that spent more than you on football. You were in the driver's seat. You had everything you needed. Even after losing to UAB, which is inexplicable.
It is unbelievably frustrating. It's unbelievably frustrating.
If I'm putting a term and a statement on what I see from this program right now, good ain't good enough. And I think you need to live by that. You need to understand that. You can ask for more while also understanding that this program is still in a decent spot.
The thing is, though, I don't even think people are really asking for more. They're asking for what should be expected. Make it to a damn conference championship game in 7 years. That's not asking for more.
The other guys before him, before Ryan, did it. They did it.
Asking for more is being mad that you don't make it to a college football playoff game. That's asking for more. We're asking for what you should be doing, being in that conference championship game.
Now, I have to address something because, listen, I found myself on social media this weekend in absolute, like, tiger hell to a certain extent with some of the takes out there and conversations that pop up. And it's inevitable. And this has happened. It dates way back before I played, but it dates back to when I played, starting in 2013. But the clowns that constantly come out of the woodworks after every Tiger football loss and try to push the idea of funding basketball over football, or they rob Peter, in this case Penny Hardaway, to pay Paul, who is Ryan Silverfield. Stop that infighting. Stop that nonsense. Because ultimately, when we look at the ability that this program has not had, the inability this program and athletic department has had to get to a bigger conference, to get into a better situation, the reason that that is the case is because they funded basketball too much in the past. They made it number one on campus. They didn't worry about football when football ultimately has shown time and time again to be the ticket. I'm tired of having to address this on a constant basis. I shouldn't bring this up. This is social media fodder and things like that. And I try not to address these things when it's strictly through social media and some of the, you know, the dumbest people speaking on behalf of an entire program that they seem to know nothing about from a funding perspective and how the money moves behind the scenes. They're just assuming things that are not true. But I have to address this because it's something that is intrinsic to the time I played, to now, to the early 2000s, to the 90s. There's always been this rush. Whoever's coaching team, could be Ryan Silverfield, could be Norvell, could be Fuente, could be, you know, Tommy West, could be any of those coaches. When they lose a ball game, there always becomes this discussion about how football is never going to get them where they wanted to go. Well, they hadn't tried it pre-2013. And we see that football has raised the roof for what this athletic department can be. Do I want it to be better? Absolutely. Do I want Ryan to be better? Absolutely. Do I want them to get to a conference title game? Absolutely. Good ain't good enough. I already said that. But I am tired of addressing this on a constant basis after every loss the Tiger football program has. You need to fund it. You need to pour resources into it because ultimately it's the ticket that gets you to where you want to go. Have they gotten there? No. Is there a guarantee that they will get there? No. But why would you not try? Why would you not put your eggs into that basket to try to move your entire athletic department forward? Just frustrating. And I had to address it all weekend, just thought I'd do it here.
I think the frustrating part of it is there's no consistency in the argument. So, like, last year it was fine. Like, last year when they were a tournament team, when Penny was a tournament team, and he had an amazing roster of guys that we could depend on that you knew were going to show up, that was fine. But now all of a sudden it's not.
And Connor, I hate to say it, and I'll talk about this game later, and I think there's more that needs to be said about it.
How much money do you give Aaron Bradshaw?
And trivializing it by using just this argument really frustrates me. But these are the same folks that watched this Tiger basketball team lose by 14 at home to a UNLV team that lost to two mid-majors, two not very good mid-majors to start the year. And Josh Pastner's coming back. He should be hyped up for that game. But lost by 14 at home. One of the worst losses I think Penny Hardaway's ever taken. Do I think he can get back to the drawing board and fix some things? Absolutely. It's just going to take some work. These are the same people that take that loss and say, well, this is because they robbed Peter to pay Paul. This is because they didn't give Penny the amount of money that he needed.
It's because you pay Aaron Bradshaw. He doesn't know how to play basketball.
Your second highest paid player who's not very good.
He's terrible. He's awful.
And I don't really see anything going forward for him. He's unplayable at the moment. But these are the same people that make that argument on the back end of that 14-point loss yesterday.
It is frustrating that we have to pit these two programs up against each other.
The infighting, it does nothing for us.
A year
ago,
we saw them have high success at the same time. And we've seen that happen numerous times. It happened when you were at Memphis, Gabe. There was success. What are we talking about? Like, what are we talking about? The basketball program and the football team are individual entities. Yes, money has changed a bit. But it's because as an athletic department, and as a university as a whole, Memphis has larger goals than just being a tournament team every year. And let's be honest about it. Penny still gets a lot of money. They still get resources.
Their resources are at the top of the conference. And they're certainly top three among mid-major schools in America.
They were given enough money to beat UNLV. I promise you.
With down their three of their top five scores.
Let's be consistent. Ryan Silverfield deserves a lot of criticism right now because his team lost a football game. And they haven't reached levels they should.
But the discussions about funding football too much and letting basketball go by the wayside are ridiculous, unfounded, and false. They are.
They're not robbing one to give to the other. And anyone who thinks that has no idea how this works. They don't. It's loud and wrong.
Absolutely. 100%. But let's go ahead and move on. Rest of college football week 12. I found some things interesting. I want to go through them. Arkansas loses another one-score game, this time a one-point game to LSU, 23-22. And you need to ask the question, how did they lose this one, Connor? Go ahead and ask it. How did they lose this one?
I'm assuming a fumble at the end of the game.
Missed a 48-yarder with 5:13 left and then never saw the ball again because LSU drove down and ultimately kneed on the ball, ended with the ball in their hands. Arkansas, it's uncanny. It is uncanny. Like South Carolina fans, I'll get to them in a second. They have a right to feel the way they feel about losing games in different, peculiar, awful ways. But no one in America can relate to Arkansas fans on that front. Arkansas football fans, that is, on that front. They have lost five of their seven games by a combined 16 points.
Oh, my Lord.
Five Check on your of Arkansas their seven friends. Games by a combined 16 points. And these were all winnable, if not already won games, right? Against Ole Miss. They're down 41-35. They're driving. They're approaching the red zone. Here comes a fumble on a first down catch. Against Memphis, they're down 32-31. They drive all the way down the field. There's about 30 seconds left. And the running back, trying to go get a first down on the 3-yard line, gets the ball punched out. They would have won that game had they not made that mistake. They miss a 48-yarder against this LSU team with 5 minutes to go when they would have taken a 2-point lead, and they never see the ball again. Check on in Auburn. How about Auburn? Talen Green implodes about halfway through the third quarter and throws 3 picks. They lose that ball game. Check on your Arkansas fans. Check on your Arkansas friends. This has been a season from hell and a couple of seasons from hell. They can't win one-score games, and they will always completely pee down their leg in crunch time moments. It's unbelievable, and it's unfailing. They do it every time.
All of the teams in the Mid-South are exploding. This is crazy. I've never seen anything like this.
Yes.
In all of my years working in radio, covering sports here in Memphis, I think this weekend truly is at the close to the top of the list of the worst sports weekends we've ever endured. Yep. Losing to UNLV when Pazner's returning. Having 6 minutes of joy. Edie and Coward?
Yeah.
We're back. And then Ja, we can be honest about it, trying to sell a foul, strains his calf. That sucks. Then you lose to a team when you had a lead the whole game. Terrible. And then Memphis. Oh, USF lost. We might. Nope, no. Lose immediately.
Yes. Yes.
And then Arkansas is just, pissing down their leg all the time.
Now, moving on, next thing, A&M. That was a hell of a comeback, huh, Connor? My God. South Carolina was up 30-3 at half. A&M comes back, wins 31-30. 27-point comeback is the biggest in school history. And here's the stat that you need to remember. They became the first SEC team since 2004. To win a game after trailing by 27-plus points. The first since 2004. Teams in that particular situation with a 27-point deficit at any point in the game were a combined 0-286 going into Saturday. They are now 1-286. And I have to give credit where credit's due. Marcel Reed was phenomenal in that second half. Made some things happen. And that comeback was furious. It was very quick. It was very quick. You knew it was coming. The third quarter, they put up, I think, 14 points, get themselves back into it, and then they just kept rolling from there. But I think Marcel Reed ends up with 432 yards passing in that game with 3 touchdowns. He has proved something to me that I didn't know existed before this year. I've been impressed with him. I'm very impressed with that A&M team. And you can sit there and you can, you know, curse their name and say they haven't played anybody in the SEC. They're playing bottom half teams in the SEC. But at the same time, most weeks they handle business pretty easily. But I do think there's a skill to being able to stick in the fight and come back the way they did and pull out games in crunch time. We've seen Georgia do it all year, and I'm impressed with them for it. So I am not going to castigate and throw A&M to the side because they played a close game with a bad South Carolina team.
Yeah.
They came back. They fought. They ultimately won a game.
They won the game. That is the goal of playing a football game, is to win. It was ugly. Their back was against the wall, but they showed something in that game where if their back is against the wall, they were able to tighten it up and execute when they need to. I thought it was a great win by them. It was ugly, but that stat is insane, and they are the one. They are the one on that stat. Also, the videos of Elko are hysterical from that game.
And I do have to mention this as well. We had a situation pop up in that game. Nick Harbor, deep touchdown. He runs up the tunnel, had a hamstring issue.
Oh, yeah.
South Carolina receiver. He's coming back. And we have a Texas State trooper jostling with him, hitting him with his elbows. Now, granted, Texas A&M did the right thing. He's not going to be on field ever again. He's done. But I just got to ask that guy, what the hell are you doing? What do you think you're doing? Do you think you're part of the team? You're a 50-something-year-old man, maybe 60. Get over your damn self. That was embarrassing. You should be embarrassed. You embarrassed your whole family. Don't touch the damn receiver. Don't touch anybody on the field. And then you want to have choice words with him. You're the one who went out of your way to elbow this guy in the chest. That was so embarrassing to me. I don't know what he was thinking, what the deal was, but he will no longer ever patrol the sidelines in an A&M game ever again. Good decision made there. Alabama can't beat Oklahoma.
No, they can't. You called that one.
23-21. I figured it'd be a close game. But not necessarily like this. Alabama turned the ball over three times. Ty Simpson threw his first pick since the Florida State game. Now, I understand this Oklahoma team has a great defense, one of the best in the country, if not the best in the country, with what they've been able to do against some of the best offenses in the SEC. But Alabama has been a very stable offense since that Florida State game. And Oklahoma is the only team that's able to get that has been able to get them out of their rhythm. But even in this game, Oklahoma won a ball game where they only had 212 total yards of offense. They got outgained 406-212. Their offense still is ugly, but that defense does a lot of heavy lifting. And in that game, I was just so impressed. Came away so impressed with Brent Venables and the resolve of that defensive football team to do what they did to that Alabama offense, to throw them off their game as bad as they did when they have looked untouchable for the past 7 weeks. Something to be said about that. And Oklahoma now puts themselves in a position where, yeah, I understand you're going to have Mizzou, LSU at home. You're going to have to win those games. But they put themselves in a position where college football playoff is very much on their radar when we had no inkling of that going into the weekend. We figured Alabama some way, somehow is going to handle business, make some things happen. Oklahoma is going to be completely out of the race. Oklahoma is in that race. There is no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, right now on the college football playoff predictor, they're at 49% to make it in, and that was just such a massive, massive win for them.
Yeah, and here's my favorite thing that came out of that. Have you seen the circle of parity? The circle of parity.
I don't think so.
In the SEC, the past couple.
Oh,
of
just
years,
the teams eating
the
each other.
The past 2 years, like I think we've had this discussion. Harold Grader, we'll talk about it a little bit later, but we've talked to him about it. Like the days of undefeated conference championship, national championship, SEC team seem to be close to over, if not all the way over. But this is the past 2 years. OU, Oklahoma, is 0-2 versus Texas. Texas is 0-3 versus Georgia. Georgia is 0-2 versus Bama. And Bama is 0-2. 0-2 versus the first team that I just mentioned.
Oklahoma. That's crazy.
There's just this revolving circle of parity with the two additions and then the two mainstays that we had before those two additions were made to the SEC in Georgia and Bama.
And they'll still probably get, what, five teams in?
Probably so.
If Oklahoma gets in?
I don't know what five teams it'll be.
I mean, A&M, Georgia, Ole Miss feel like a lock right now. And then I think Bama still gets in.
Bama, but they got to handle business.
They do. And then Oklahoma. That's probably the five.
Oklahoma.
Because
Texas, that was ugly, and that's what I wanted to get to before we get to Lane Kiffin.
Sheesh.
I don't even want to talk about Texas.
I mean, damn.
I haven't really been impressed with them all year. Yeah, they've taken steps in the right direction. Arch has played better. Arch Manning, that is. That's cool. That was the Georgia that everyone has been waiting to see the entire season. Just pouring it on and pouring it on and stepping on the throat of their opponent when they feel like they have an in. Georgia scores in that third quarter, and here comes a surprise onside that they immediately get. Kirby Smart coaching like his life depends on it. That defense just stuffing the run. You cannot get on schedule. Texas could not get on schedule.
23 yards rushing.
23 yards rushing. First and second down were failures the entire night. That's why they only scored 10 points. And then, you know, offensively, get ready for this, okay? I've heard some people discuss this, but not enough people have been discussing this. What do you think? I'm just going to ask you off top. What do you think of the Heisman race right this moment?
I mean, Gunnar Stockton has to be included.
Okay. But it's wide open. Like Julian's saying, great stats, undefeated Ohio
Ty
State.
Ty Simpson, maybe.
Undefeated Ohio State. But you sit there and you look at Julian saying, and you say, first couple of games he started slow, didn't put up a bunch of stats, and they haven't really played the best teams in the Big Ten. I'm not that impressed with their body of work. Fernando Mendoza, sure, I can sit here and say he's the favorite in the clubhouse, undefeated Indiana, really good story. He says all the right things every time he steps up to a mic. He seems to have a great personality that people rally around. But, you know, in the biggest games this year, Penn State threw a pick against Oregon. I know they won the ball game, but he threw a pick six that allowed Oregon to tie that ball game up. Ty Simpson now has two losses attached to his name. And in each of the losses, he's thrown a very, very bad pick that ultimately led to Alabama losing the ball game outright. So I got to the Gunnar Stockton case. And when you look at Gunnar's stats, they're not gaudy, right? 2,269 yards, averaging 225 yards per game passing, 19 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. That's good, but that's not that, you know, 40-touchdown number that everybody expects from a Heisman-winning quarterback. He's also run the ball pretty well, 350 yards, 8 touchdowns. So he's accounted for ultimately 27 touchdowns so far this year. But I think the point that I would make regarding Gunnar Stockton and why he should be in this conversation is when we talk about the Heisman, we always come back to that saying of Heisman moments. Have you had your Heisman moment yet? When you think of the highlight reel, what would you point out? What game do you circle as that's where he won the Heisman? That's where he produced the best. When you look at Gunnar Stockton in his three highest-ranked, biggest games of the year, granted he lost one of them, he has performed his best and played his best football in those particular football games. Against Texas, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception. Against Ole Miss, 4 touchdowns, 0 interception, nearly threw for 300. And then, of course, against Bama, had the 1 touchdown, did not make a mistake with the football. So between those
three. He was great Tennessee, too.
But, and he's great against Tennessee. But between those three ball games, he is 9 touchdown to 1 interception with a 70% completion percentage. In the biggest ball games, highest ranked ball games of the year, if you add Tennessee to that, that's 11 touchdowns to 1 interception with still a 70% clip as far as completion percentage is concerned. And right around 250 yards passing per game. So Gunnar Stockton's case isn't the overall body of work.
Right.
It's about who shows up, when they show up, and Gunnar Stockton shows up in the biggest moments in the biggest games of the season for that Georgia football.
Well, and it's one of those things where I don't necessarily think he needs to win the Heisman, but he needs to be in the conversation.
Absolutely.
Because he has stepped up
open.
In the biggest game. It's wide open. It feels the most open I can remember.
It's wide open, and he has made some crucial throws in crucial moments. I always go back to that Tennessee throw down the sideline,
crazy.
London Humphreys at the end of the game to put themselves in a position to win. You know, like he has the moments in those big games that I look around the country And I can't really pick out the quarterbacks who have those same amount of moments, who have the same ability to show up in the big games as Gunnar Stockton has so far this year. He's been phenomenal in the biggest moments for that offense. So I'm not saying he should win it. It's not what I'm saying. But with the Heisman race as wide open as it is right now, do not take for granted the ability to be good in the biggest moments of the season. That's who Gunnar Stockton is. And hell, like when you look at Georgia, that's kind of who their quarterbacks in those big peak years are. Stetson Bennett was that way. In those nasty games against lower competition, he's okay. He lets his supporting cast do it. But when he was asked to make those big throws, big plays, and the biggest moments in an SEC title game and a national championship, he was making those throws and those plays more often than not. I feel the same way about Gunnar Stockton. He's not going to wow you with anything from a physical stand in a physical way. Athleticism, nothing like that. But he is a gamer when you ask him to be a gamer. All right, now let's go ahead and grab a break. When we come back, we have to address, for you Ole Miss fans around here, the Lane Kiffin drama that popped up over the weekend and really has been perpetuating for the past 3 weeks with all of the SEC jobs open and all of the interest he is garnering from all of those openings, Florida and LSU in particular. More on that on the other side.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. I did see also to add to the bad news, not that I want to add to the bad news, but it just it came across my social media feed today. Newbies lease is not being renewed. It's going to run out.
Rest in
right
peace.
Right there on Highland Street, right there by the University of Memphis campus. I frequented there.
Oh, I was there all the time. Multiple times a week.
In my college days. 50-year run. Maybe coming to an end here soon.
Yeah, 50-year run, sure. Yeah. If I remember correctly, when we were at Memphis, Newbies opening back
yeah,
up
opening
was
back, but how long was it closed?
I don't know. We talked
because I think the lease had run out and then they found a way to reopen.
Yeah. But it definitely was closed for a little bit. Cuz I remember it opening back up was a huge deal cuz I remember talking to my parents who went to Memphis about how they used to go to Newbies, and they were
bars
sad
will
when it
never
closed.
Be the same.
Bars will never. Yeah, we kind of talk about Newbies like Jordan's legacy. We just act like the years he played baseball didn't exist. The years Newbies was closed didn't exist. The Wizard years never happened.
Yeah, I feel like the first couple of years of my college experience, from like 2013 to 15, I didn't. Now, granted, I was underage, so I shouldn't be saying this. I feel like I didn't go there very often because I think it was either closed or it was just not happening. People weren't showing up.
It was my – because I came back to Memphis for my junior year, and I feel like it had just reopened or it was really getting rolling at that time. Because I was there –
the Jordan
like,
legacy is hilarious.
I was there multiple times a week probably. We'd go there, watch Grizzlies games, Tigers games. There was karaoke that they would do.
So if Newbies is
pool.
Jordan, what would be LeBron? What ball
Silkies.
Would be LeBron?
Silkies?
They never taken a day off.
No, never taken a day off.
Although the GOATs aren't there. I mean, I haven't seen the GOATs in quite a while.
The GOATs are still there.
They're still there. I just haven't seen them very
I was
often.
There for, like, St. Patrick's Day weekend, maybe? I can't remember.
Yeah, always. Oh, that's, yes. It's got to be St. Patty's.
Yeah. The GOATs are still there.
Yeah, but they never took a year off.
Never took a year off.
Just grinded. Grinded. Through COVID. through everything.
Mickey Mouse ring.
they always showed up. All right, now to Lane Kiffin, who I don't know if he's going to show up at Ole Miss next year, or maybe in the playoff this year.
He needs to just make a damn decision.
There's a lot going on, and I know there's a tendency with a coach like Lane Kiffin, who has given Ole Miss unprecedented success, who has shown them a level that they have yet to unlock in their program's history. Three straight 10-win seasons. What is it? Eight wins at home this year? Like, it's unbelievable what he's been able to accomplish. So there's a tendency to say, you let him take his sweet jolly old time. He's given you everything and more. He's delivered and then added on top of it. But what I would tell to those people before we play this sound, before we get into the conversation, Ole Miss fans, Ole Miss boosters, the Ole Miss athletic department are well within their right to be frustrated with Lane Kiffin and the way he's acting right now, because while he has given them good results, they've reciprocated that relationship. They've paid him handsomely. They've given him what he needed off the field to go recruit the best possible players to put together a good program and a good roster. And they've given him the most free will, in my opinion, of any coach at an SEC football program in 2025, in the year of our Lord 2025. He has the most free will of any coach in the conference at this particular moment. He calls the shots, they make sure it happens for him, which is not the case at a place like LSU, which is not the case at a place like Florida. So I would say for people that have that take of, well, Lane Kiffin's delivered and exceeded expectations that you ever had for him, you should be indebted to him. Well, Lane Kiffin was also kind of persona non grata when he took the job. It was a rehab project for him. They had to build him up. There was a little bit of a chance they took on his persona, his mentality, the way he acts around taking jobs. They threw a lot of money at him. They gave him everything he needed. So I think that you can talk about Lane Kiffin and how well he's done, but the love has been reciprocated. And with that, I feel like Lane Kiffin needs to treat this a little bit better. But let's go ahead and go after the Florida game, which it was a very, very cool environment in Vaught-Hemingway. I got to give credit where credit's due. And the first win that Lane Kiffin's had over Florida at home, it was really cool to see. But this is how he answered after the game regarding what he's told his team, the coaching carousel, the interest he's garnering on the open market.
Lane, read the story from Ross Dellinger this week that he had that sit down with you, and there was a really striking quote there at the end where you talked about picturing yourself being at the elite Blue Bloods, but you know, you sort of changed and you didn't think it was necessarily a place like Ole Miss, but you've sort of changed your way of thinking and that maybe this is the last chapter. There's a lot of talk about you for coaching searches right now. Do you anticipate being the head coach at Ole Miss next year?
Yeah, I think the last chapter thing makes me feel like I'm like 80 years old, you know? So I don't like being old, so I don't really like that part of the story that makes me feel like I'm on my last chapter. So I love what we're doing here. Today was awesome, and I don't talk about that stuff. And really, to even talk about it right now would be so disrespectful to our players and how well they played today. So, you know, we got a lot of things going here, doing really well, and I love it here. So,
all right, I understand not wanting distractions to get into the minds of your players, because we've seen that multiple times where coaches involved with other jobs, may take them. He talks to his players about it. They don't play as hard. They get frustrated down the stretch of the season, yada, yada, yada. But what I would say to him, to say it's disrespectful to his players with how they played against Florida to even discuss what he's going to do this offseason, I find kind of ridiculous. Those players play for you at Ole Miss. They want to see the best for you. They want to play for you, and they want to play for Ole Miss as well. They love that program. They love what they've been able to accomplish. You don't think it would ease their mind if you said, I'm not going anywhere? You don't think it would ease their mind? You don't think they'd play harder if you said, hey, I'm locked in here at Ole Miss. I want to go win a national title this year. I don't think it would be disrespectful at all. I think it would ease some of the fears that they have in their brain right now. I've been in that situation before with Justin Fuente. If he would have, and he was always going to go to Virginia Tech, we kind of knew it, but you saw at the end of the year how bad that sort of, you know, treated us. We lost three of our last four. When you feel like your coach is leaving, it's just hard to focus on the task at hand. It's hard to focus on every single matchup you have week to week, especially heading into a college football playoff that is it's going to be the best teams in the country, and you're going to have your work cut out for you every single week. So I don't think it would be disrespectful to your players if you just told them you were staying. But the fact that you're not saying that leads us to believe another thing. And reports have come out regarding you potentially leaving Ole Miss for Florida or for LSU. Ole Miss reportedly has put a deadline on Lane Kiffin's decision. Now, this is from Pete Nankos on On3. They're looking for clarity about Lane Kiffin's future with the Rebels this week. There were reports and confirmed reports that members of Lane's family have visited both Gainesville and Baton Rouge over the past 2 days. There have been jets. There have been pictures. People are following them. This is confirmed from what I understand. But Ole Miss has had talks with him since the Florida game about these reports, about his plans next. And they said if Kiffin does not meet their deadline, Ole Miss could potentially decide to not allow him to coach the Rebels in the college football playoff. I think that's drastic. I will say that. Even if he's going to leave, I would want the coach that got me to these heights to finish the job. There may be other people that disagree with me on that, but that is coming from a place of, hey, I was recruited by this guy. Even if he's going to leave, I want to enjoy my last couple of moments, last couple of games with him. But I also, on the other hand, don't blame Ole Miss for taking this approach. Why do I say that? Because I don't think Lane Kiffin is handling this with the tender loving care that he needs to. It's easy to say you're going to stay. If you're not going to stay, you say what you said on Saturday after the Florida game. But I also see him all over social media doing what he normally does. The trolling, the S-posting, the, you know, going after fans, you know, media, all those things. He had a quote about the good old days, and then he posted it on social media. But when you say good old days, doesn't that mean that you're going to go into a new era and you'll remember fondly the good old days, even though you're not in them? So he's still doing his normal act. And if there was ever a time for Lane Kiffin to act less like Lane Kiffin, it's probably right now. When you have LSU, you have Florida, and you have Ole Miss trying to plan for the future and make $100 million-plus decisions going into the future. It's just unbecoming. It just is. These are big money decisions that have lasting effects on the SEC and college football writ large. And he's treating it as if it's a normal non-conference week against Samford. I would just like him to handle this with a bit more TLC. And it gets me back to what I said off the top of this conversation. You can sit there constantly and you can say Lane Kiffin has gone above and beyond for that program at Ole Miss. But Ole Miss has reciprocated that in more ways than one. They have given him all the resources to succeed. They took a chance on him when a lot of people were not willing to take said chance on him. They have let him rehab his image time after time after time again. And the reason that he is considered for these unbelievable jobs in Florida and LSU is because of what Ole Miss allowed him to be and allowed him to do on their campus. So while I think it would be drastic for Ole Miss, if he does not meet the deadline and give them clarity by said deadline, I think it would be drastic to not let him coach the college football playoff. I do understand the sentiment. These are decisions that are bigger than Lane Kiffin. These are decisions that are bigger than any one man. So if Ole Miss feels that that is the right thing to do, to be honest with you, I support them through that process.
My only advice to Lane Kiffin would be, and this isn't true in all moments, but honesty is very rarely disrespectful. Just be honest with your players. Just be honest with people. If you're going to leave, let them know. Let them know, because this is a cloud hanging over it. And it was fun for a week, but
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
We're almost a month into this now, and these rumors and plane checks and tracking, and we know
I debate that though, Connor. This is where, like,
honesty's never disrespectful.
Yes, it's not disrespectful, but I don't know if you yield the results that you need to if you tell them, hey, I'm leaving after this year. If they have that in their mind, they know it already. I'm not saying it wouldn't work, but like, I've gone back and forth with this. Is it better to have them still questioning it and having it unknown through this process, or is it better to just let them know up front, hey, I'm going to go to LSU, hey, I'm going to go to Florida?
I would rather know than be lied to.
As a player, I would like to know.
But if I'm
in Lane Kiffin's position and I want to win a college football playoff games and make a run, which one is more beneficial for the team and the program writ large to make that run in the college football playoff?
When it starts becoming a distraction, you have to be honest.
I would say so, but it's a tough situation, but I don't think Lane's helping himself in any way, shape, or form. I think he is making this a lot harder than it needs to be.
Yeah.
And I think Ole Miss fans are right there with us in saying that.
I understand the frustration.
You have people from the government. You know, we thought that LSU was the only program that had government officials commenting on this. I think the state secretary commented on it, Michael Watson. He said it was Ole Miss. He was quote tweeting something. Ole Miss would have a very good football coach in 2026. It may be Lane Kiffin. It may be not. And then Michael Watson responded, couldn't agree more. At some point, it'd be nice from our current coach, tagged Lane Kiffin, to reciprocate the love and gratitude shown by our administration, players, fan base, and collective. It shouldn't be this hard. And for the most part, don't agree with every utterance, every word there, but for the most part, I do agree.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.